And we are now live.
Great. Well, thank you, LTD board members, LTD staff, and members of the public for joining us today in this remote format. We're using this to comply with Governor Kate Brown's Stay Home, Save Lives order. These remote meetings allow the LTD board to meet its obligations while keeping all those involved as safe as possible. So thanks again for everyone for being here. So in addition to before I get there, let's do a quick roll call. I think I kind of did an informal one just like looking at the screen. So I'm just going to say that Kate Reed, Joshua Scove, Don Norden, Caitlin Vargas, Stephen Yet, and Emily Secord are all present. The really quick comment is today, we are, in addition to our weekly ridership and operations update today, we will be holding two public hearings. The first one will be about the proposed fiscal year 2019-20 supplemental budget. And the second one will be on the proposed fiscal year 2020-21 annual budget. And with that, AJ, as general manager, do you have any comments for the board?
Just briefly make comments a little bit in line with what you're indicating about we're continuing, of course, to meet as part of the governor's focus on staying home, saving people's lives. And LTD, as everybody knows, has been really focused on having a public health first approach towards our service model. And today you will continue to hear updates on that as we have. And I will say we are just in the beginning conversations about should Lane County move into phase two, what would that look like? It's too soon to tell, but I just wanted to make sure people knew that although we're focused on what's happening daily and what we see in the foreseeable week or so, we're also looking ahead to make sure that when we come to the board, we're prepared to provide information about the next phases. So excited to brief you at future meetings as to where we are with those plans. That's it.
Thank you very much. Announcements and additions to the agenda from anyone? Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and move on to the public hearing. So today, to just make a quick note, when giving testimony during one of the hearings, please keep your comments specific to the topic of the hearing. All those who have raised their hand to provide testimony will be called on to speak. Actually, before I go through all of that, checking in with Camille, do we have anyone signed up to speak today?
I don't have any hands raised yet.
Okay.
Oh, I have one hand raised.
Oh, great, great.
It looks like that we have a few people that are trying to sort that out.
Okay. Oh, you know what? I didn't give the indication on how to do that with the phone. So maybe I should read it anyway. I thought maybe I could not read it if no one was interested. So let me go ahead and read that. So please note the following instructions. To indicate that you would like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button. For those of you who are attending via phone only, press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. For those attending via phone only, the last four digits of your phone number will be called. When you are called, please state your name, city of residence, and who you are representing for the audio record. And once you have provided testimony, your hand will be lowered. Please do not raise your hand again because only one opportunity to speak is provided. Public testimony is limited to 3 minutes per community member. For those unable or not wanting to speak publicly, testimony may be provided via email at clerk@ltd.org. That's C-L-E-R-K at ltd.org. Great. Now with that, I'm going to go ahead and ask Christina to do a staff presentation for the public. And then at that point afterward, I will open a public hearing. So Christina, take it away. Thank you very much.
Sure. So thank you very much for allowing me to share with you our supplemental budget request for the current fiscal year 2019-2020. This is specifically for our Medicaid fund. And we are requesting two changes, and that will be on the next slide. The first change is a change to the transfer from the general fund. That's on the next slide, please. The first one is there's two changes that we're requesting. One is a change to the general fund transfer to the Medicaid fund. And the reason for that, it's a $188,000 increase of the transfer. And that's because the adopted budget had a beginning working capital estimate of $132,000. But the actual working capital after the books were closed was only $6,000. So the difference between the actual and the estimate is due to the timing of reimbursement for negotiated administrative costs as well as claims, which every year is a challenge for us to predict. And then the second component is an increase to the requirements to $13.5 million. And the reason for that increase is because they, two things. One is they changed the ORSs, which increased the costs. And the second is anticipated increase in claims. Now, this particular portion of the request is one that does not have a change to the general fund at all, in that it's the claims are reimbursed fully, so therefore it's a net neutral impact to the budget. And we also are not 100% sure that we will meet this number. In fact, we think that it will be lower than the request, but because of the requirements that we might that the budget has to be we cannot spend over the budget that's authorized by the board. We're making this request sort of as an insurance to make sure that at the end of the fiscal year, we aren't doing a emergency supplemental budget. And so the last slide has the exact changes that I just described, with highlighting the specific line items in purple that we're requesting for change. And this hasn't changed from what we showed at the budget committee, and that the budget committee actually approved this supplemental budget.
Great, thank you very much.
Does anybody have any questions?
Right, any questions from any of the board or comments? All right, then with that, I'm going to go ahead. Oh, Christina, did you have more to say or present?
No, I don't. Am I going through the fiscal year 20?
Oh, I think we're doing a piece by piece. So this one is just for the supplemental budget, and then we'll have you back on for the second public hearing.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Christina. So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing for the proposed FY20 supplemental budget. So it is now open. So Camille, who is our first person?
Okay, Mike Keating. Go right ahead.
Hi, this is Matt Keating, Lane Community College board member, Eugene City Councilor-elect. I'm speaking tonight just as a South Eugene resident and a neighbor, concerned about protecting routes in our neighborhood. I addressed the board tonight to emphasize also the importance of sharing ridership data, both pre-COVID and during COVID, with the public. A transparent and open process is fundamental, I'm sure you'd agree, to small d democracy, and it is especially important and imperative as we move into open meetings in the digital space. Not only was the link to this particular meeting a challenge to locate on LTD's website, but I'm deeply concerned that the public at large has access to data as well as an easy access to navigate and participate in public testimonies such as this special meeting tonight. I asked the board to consider that without the ability to check ridership numbers, it's difficult for the public to wrap their head around any proposed route changes that may be proposed during this COVID-19 emergency. I ask please for the board to consider a more transparent process, and I ask the board to please consider more public dialogue before making any decisions tonight.
Great, thank you very much, Mr. Keating. And by the way, congratulations on your recent election to the Eugene City Council. Just a reminder to everyone, I forgot to mention that there is no 30-second or any warning about your time being over. So please Keep in mind, if you can see a screen, you do have 3 minutes to speak. Who do we have next, Camille?
I do not have any other hands raised.
Oh, okay, great. Just making sure for all the current attendees, if you'd like to speak, go ahead and raise your hand or press *9 on your phone. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close. Oh, I think I just saw a hand go up. Is that right, oh, Camille?
Yes, yep. 1 second. Jeff, go right ahead.
Yeah, and actually, I just wanted to check with you guys because it looks like there's going to be open public testimony on the second part then. Is that?
That is correct. Would you like to wait to give testimony at this, on the FY 2021 budget?
Yeah, I would love to. I just wanted to make sure that we were going to be able to then.
Of course.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thanks.
Great. We'll hold you for the next one then.
Perfect.
Thank you. Okay, with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing regarding the fiscal year 20 supplemental budget. And we'll go ahead and move on to the next portion, which is the proposed FY fiscal year 2021 budget. And Christina, is it back to you?
Okay, so this is the public hearing on the fiscal year 2021 budget. This budget runs from July 1st, 2020 through to June 30, 2021. It reflects what was approved by the budget committee, which met on May 18th, with one change that I'll review. This year's budget has been developed amidst the global economic instability driven by the COVID-19 pandemic. And by all economic measures, we are in a COVID-19 triggered recession. Our economic recovery is highly dependent on the degree of government intervention and the ability to effectively control the coronavirus. So these responses impact the confidence people have in returning to their pre-coronavirus activities. And so the budget that we present to you was developed with the best information that we have today and with the thoughtful guidance from our board and also from our budget committee. Next slide, please. Payroll taxes have historically comprised a significant part of our revenues. And at our April 15 board meeting, we presented an analysis of the potential impacts to this important revenue source to our board of directors. And the three green bars represent the scenarios that were developed by the University of Oregon graduate students that using various unemployment and recovery assumptions. And those three scenarios show a peak unemployment in June. The V-shaped recovery is a best case scenario with only a 16% peak unemployment and a relatively quick economic recovery. The U-shaped recovery has a 33% peak unemployment and a slower recovery. And then the third scenario has two 33% unemployment peaks. And the impact from the three scenarios range from a decline in payroll taxes from between $6 million and $15 million for the remainder of this fiscal year and next fiscal year. And then LTD independently modeled payroll type taxes, and that scenario is the blue bar. And our model showed a $10.4 million impact. And our assumptions were unemployment of 8% in March and then peaking at 25% in June and July, and then recovering to 14% by June of 2021. And then the LTD's board's responses to the scenarios were basically drove our assumptions for the fiscal year 21 budget, which was to utilize the multi-peak scenario for our fiscal year 2021 budgeting, which you see highlighted in red bar on the far right. So the next slide shows the board's responses to what we showed during those different scenarios. And so I won't read these, but I give you a chance to take a look at them. So the next slide. So the CARES Act was approved on March 27 and provides $25 billion in federal assistance to support the transit industry. And of that $25 billion, LTD is eligible for $25 million. A couple things to note is that in this current fiscal year, we're expected to use about $4.3 million. And then we're expected to use another $18.3 million by the end of fiscal year 21. Which means that by the end of fiscal year 21, we are budgeting to use $22.7 million of the $25 million grant, which means there would be only $2.3 million remaining. Next slide, please. So, LTD will... basically provide services in a way that it adapts to, based on the economic recovery. But this budget provides a constraint of 254,000 service hours in order to cap our expenditures with the projected resources for the year. This budget also challenges us to find alternative service models in order to provide essential services safely and affordably. And we'll be using the CARES Act dollars to offset our revenue shortfalls and to maintain a balanced budget, including the minimum 2 months of reserves required by policy. The CARES Act will cover support for our operations and our COVID-19 impacts, including materials and services, personnel, and pension fund losses. And one thing is, I guess our COVID-related revenue losses. Camille, would you mind, I think there's another couple slides there's a presentation in there with another couple slides in it. Would you mind bringing that presentation up, please?
Okay, yes, give me just a moment.
Thank you.
Which slide would you like me to start on?
Let's go to the fiscal year 2021 proposed budget slide, please. Keep going. I think we're good.
Yeah. Oh, right. I see what you mean. Apologies.
We're good right there.
Sorry. Wrong button. I'll pull it. Sorry.
Okay, so this next section is an overview of the highlights from each of the funds. And LPD has five self-balancing funds. There's the general fund, the capital projects fund, the specialized services fund, the Medicaid fund, and the point-to-point fund. And the purpose of the separate funds is to ensure transparency and accountability for the specific purposes that the monies were received. And the presentation that has revised on it.
Okay, one moment.
Because the next slide is the change I wanted to talk about. with the next slide.
Yes. There you go.
Thank you, Camille. The pension committee approved contributing to the ATU pension based on the actuary's recommendation for the ATU trust. But I had not incorporated that into the budget when I presented it to the budget committee. And so I've now incorporated that, and that particular pension contribution is funded through the CARES Act, which allows the funds, all of the funds to remain balanced. And the spirit of what the budget committee had approved was to fund the pension as per what the actuary actually recommended. So the next few slides incorporate that change. So the next slide, please. So this slide has all resources and all requirements for all funds. And a budget basically is our financial plan. And the resources are the cash on hand and the anticipated revenues, and they all must balance with the requirements, which are the outgoing expenditures plus the working capital for cash flow and reserves for policy. And a few things to note when you're looking at these pies, the payroll taxes comprise the majority of our non-grant revenue. The personnel services are our largest organizational costs. And the capital project costs vary each year, as does associated federal and state assistance. And these pies have both appropriated and non-appropriated requirements. So the appropriated dollars are what we are approved to spend without additional board approval. And the non-appropriated cannot be spent without additional board approval. Now I'm seeing here that there's a couple of things that are cut off. That's the gray one, that's the interfund transfers. And the blue pie is the working capital restricted for reserves for policy. And I want to talk a little bit about the appropriated dollars. Basically, the appropriated dollars, there's an increase of $15.8 million or 16% from the fiscal year 20 amended budget of $96.3 million. $5.5 million of the increase is for transfers from the general fund to other funds and primarily to cover the grant matches for capital projects. The capital project expenditures have increased $13 million, primarily for bus replacements and the Santa Clara Transit Station. And then the other thing that you see here is the Medicaid fund expenditures increased $1 million because of increased Oregon statute requirements. The Specialized Services Fund increased $700,000 for Mentor Oregon and the Full Access Brokerage clients, which are the ones that we receive as a condition, the one that we serve as a condition of receiving our federal funds. And then offsetting these increases is the decrease of $3.8 million in the general fund, for transit services expenditures from our fiscal year 20 budget. The next slide, please. This slide illustrates that we are maintaining the required 2 months of operating reserve in each of our operating funds. You can see basically the dynamic between the beginning working capital reserves and the cash flow and the ending operating reserve. So the blue bar is the beginning working capital for reserves and cash flow, and it tells you how well we managed our costs during the prior year. And it's the actual results of the prior year's revenues less the expenditures. The green bar is the ending working capital reserve, and it tells us, based on what our budgeted revenues and expenditures are, how much we expect to have as a reserve. And then in this current year, we expect to be utilizing some of our beginning working capital reserves to pay for our current year operating expenditures. But we are managing our budgeted costs to maintain the 2 months reserve policy, which is that orange bar. So the orange bar tells you what our reserve policy is. And so based on our projected fiscal year 21 available resources and projected spending, we are just meeting our 2 months reserve required by policy. Next slide. Camille, is there a way of showing the rest of the pies that are on the slide?
I don't have a way to change anything. That's really weird. That must have been a glitch. I don't know why it was doing that.
Can we show this slide then? Because
there we go.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. So the only change to the general fund is the one that I already talked about, which is the inclusion of the ATU pension contribution. And this fund funds our daily operations, and it's historically our largest funding source is our payroll taxes. But this year, the CARES Act is covering our lost revenue from payroll type taxes and cash fares and passes. And so you can see that the CARES Act dollars are the $18.3 million, or the 28% of revenue this year. And then the largest component for our operating requirements is our personnel, which is comprises more than 75% of our operating requirements. And then the general fund also funds the transfers to match our operating funds and the capital fund. Next slide, please. So this slide shows the contracted wages for ATU, and then it also shows our admin. And the ATU increases are based on the four-year contract that was approved by the board on April 5th. And then the administrative staff piece, you see that we'll be having some personnel reductions in furlough days as well as on the ATU side. The furlough days save us about $270,000. And then we also have some, the reductions personnel was our largest savings with regards to offset partly by the unemployment insurance costs that we pay. Next slide, please. So this is our administrative employee pension fund. And this is sort of the visual of what's going on in that fund. It's a closed fund. What that means is that there is an increase in the number of retirees that are receiving benefits and a decrease in the number of employees that are contributing to the plan. This shows also that there was an impact based on the change in COVID, because of COVID-19 and the impact of the stock market. So you see there's a $3.4 million loss from the beginning of the calendar year. But this is a 20-year plan for getting the plan to be a fully funded. The contributions that we make to this plan ensure that we can fund the pension within the period that people retire. Next slide, please. This is the ATU pension funding, and investments are, returns are variable, but this one has an even larger impact because there's a larger participation, and this is an open plan, and so you can see the $5.3 million loss in this plan from the beginning of the calendar year. And you can also see that the administrative costs for both of these two pension funds are remaining relatively flat. Next slide, please.
Apologies, my scroll bar hit.
That's okay.
I think, was it this one or the next one, Christina?
The capital fund budget.
Is it this slide or?
It's now.
Do you want me to go one?
Yeah, please. Yes, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
So the majority of our funding for the capital fund is from the grants, federal government, and some from the state, and then matching funds from our general fund. And the largest spend this year, you can see, is to replace our aging fleet. And then there's also some spend for the Santa Clara Transit Center. And then there is restriction for grant match, and that is for ongoing projects that continue beyond this current fiscal year and next fiscal year. Next slide, please. So these are some of the capital fund budget highlights. Basically, we have the $5.5 million of general fund transfers. We talked about the restricted working capital for grant matches for grant-funded projects going forward. And then this summarizes what percentage each one of the major projects make up of the budget that we have. So like we talked about, the biggest piece is the replacement of our aging fleet, followed by the Santa Clara Transit Station. And then some other important projects like upgrading our technology and then some planning projects. Next slide, please. Matt, do you want to cover this slide? Okay. So this slide is basically just shows the impact of our aging fleet. And as you can see, this slide and the next slide, they're both showing similar kinds of things, but this one's basically showing each of the types of buses and how their age. And then the next one sort of takes the average, but it's just giving you an idea to show you why it's so important that we are replacing our fleet, because our fleet is aged greater than what other agencies consider to be best practices for maintaining their fleet. Next slide. This is just the continuation of, like I said, this is the average. It's the same as, similar to the other slide. It's just showing the average as opposed to the individual buses and their aging. Next slide. These are some of our major projects. Like I talked about, that they continue beyond this current fiscal year into future fiscal years. And I just wanted to show what our some of our plan high large dollar plan projects are that we're using that grant funded working capital to match. And what we're planning, not all of these grants are executed. And as you can see, many of them are federal funded grant programs. Next slide, please. This is our special service budget. And you see it has increased, and that is because of the Mentor Oregon and Full Access Brokerage clients. And they're covering about 100 individuals and 1,000 trips per week, which is a 30% increase from what we had before. And I see, Camille, I don't know if you exit out and come back, but then it might show these missing, the things that are not showing. Thank you. So basically they can see it now, which is just, it's basically just showing the different requirements, with our largest being the Eugene Springfield Metro services that we provide, followed by our rural Lane County services, which is the orange orange pie piece there. Next slide, please. So this is the highlights for the budget, the fund we just looked at. We expect to have a full year of ridership for both the Mentor Oregon and Full Access Brokerage clients, as I just talked about. This fund also has the stiff funded programs in it. So it has things like the Cottage Grove and also the Eugene Mobility as a Service projects, the Cottage Grove Transit Demand Plan, and then some of our out of district routes. Operating revenues and requirements are both up because of the stiff funded programs that we have. And then the general transfer is considered to be relatively flat from last year. Next slide, please. This is our point-to-point budget. And basically it funds our non-single occupancy vehicle programs. And this one is currently under review, so for the different programs. Next slide, please. This talks a little bit about, for the most part, all of the point-to-point programs have a 10.27 general fund match, and except for ride share activities, which are 100% funded, and then Banpool, which is 100% funded by the general fund. And most of the point-to-point programs are on a three-year cycle, of which this is the last of the three-year cycle in fiscal year 21. And so the transfers for this fund vary by the programs and the associated match requirements, because this fund is primarily a grant-funded program, fund, sorry. Next slide, please. This is our Medicaid budget, and again, you can see that both the requirements and the resources balance. And these funds both are Medicaid, non-emergency medical transportation, which is the largest component, and then the waiver transportation, which is the transportation that we provide to those that are DHS clients that are in-house. The next slide, please. This year we have both Trillium and Pacific Source clients, as opposed to previous years where we just had Trillium. And the operating requirements and revenues are both up $2.1 million because of having a higher usage due to those two types of clients now instead of just Trillium. And then the waiver non-medical service costs increases are partly offset by new contract resources and the ride reimbursement rate, which has been increased to $4 per trip. And the general fund transfer for this is also roughly flat. Next slide, please. So this last slide is a summary of everything that we've discussed. The items in purple are what we are proposing and requesting, we'll be requesting the board to approve in June. And the green box highlights the changes that were made since the budget committee meeting to add back that actuarially recommended pension contribution. The items in black are for reference and they don't require any approval. And you could see here that at the top that the transit services expenditures are down by $3.8 million. And then you can see that the transfer to the capital project fund, which we talked about, is up by $5.5 million as for match. And then you can see under the specialized services fund, there's a $700,000 increase. And that's, we talked about being the mentor organ and full access brokerage clients. And then on the Medicaid side, there's a $1 million increase. And we talked about that being the increase in the Oregon statute requirements, as well as both having Pacific Source and Trillium clients. And then we the capital projects fund you see is a $13 million increase. And that was primarily for projects, the largest of being the bus replacements and the Santa Clara Transit Station. And then in summary, the line that says total fiscal year 2021 proposed appropriation, that's the $15.8 million total increase or 16%. And you see the majority of that is because of those transfers for capital projects and capital and the capital projects fund, the non-general fund transit service project funds. That's it.
Great, thank you very much, Christina. So now we are at the part before we do a public hearing about this. And just to remind everyone, this is a public testimony for just this particular topic alone, which is the proposed 2020-21 budget. To indicate that you'd like to provide testimony, please use the raise your hand button if you're on your computer. If you're attending via phone only, please press *9 on your phone to raise your hand. When it is your time to speak, your name will be called. If you are attending by phone, it'll be the last four digits of your phone number. Please state your name, city of residence, and who you're representing for the audio record. And then there's only one opportunity to speak per person, and it's for 3 minutes per community member. And then finally, if you would like to, would not like to speak publicly, you can still provide us testimony via email at clerk@ltd.org. And with that, Camille, who do we have next?
First, we have Marianne Nolte. Marianne, go right ahead.
Thank you. My name is Marianne Nolte. I'm a resident of Eugene, and I'm here tonight for a Better Eugene Springfield Transportation. I just wanted to thank you for being here tonight and for taking the time to hear our public comments. I wanted to take the time to just let you know that BEST has written a memo that asks several questions we had about the 2021 budget. We submitted the memo to the board clerk email address that Carl just mentioned, as well as the LTD board members. I know that this budget was probably challenging to put together, and I know that LTD will likely produce supplemental budgets as you get more information and as the dust settles in the world a little bit. So this memo is not in any way meant to poke holes in the work you've done. Mainly, we just wanted to share the questions we had, and we hope that those could be places to start a conversation about plans moving forward. So please take a look at the memo if you can, and then if you have questions or need more details, please feel free to reach out to me. Thank you for working to provide safe and useful service to the community, and we'll look forward to hearing how things develop in the future.
Thank you very much, Marianne. Camille, who do we have next?
I was on mute and talking to myself. Oh, I apologize. Okay. Jess, go right ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Jessica Roshak.
Yeah, Jess Roshak, Eugene, and I'm speaking on behalf of Southeast Neighbors Transportation Committee. We just want to thank you guys for all your dedication and the budget committee for our beloved transit system here. But we just have a few questions and comments that we feel compelled to make in regards to what we've seen, and the rest we can send an email with Marianne. Said, and I'd like to echo Matt's sentiments in the beginning of the meeting that, you know, we had this press release on Friday and that we effectively have had two business days to look over this, so not enough time. But one, we'd like to ask and seek clarification about the $544,000 allotment to planning studies listed in the budget. Seems like a pretty specific large amount in this difficult year, and so we'd like to ask what that money is allocated for. Second, we wanted to make a comment about the Millability as Service program for Cottage Grove and Engo. They've been given in the allotment of $6.5 million over 10 years, almost as much as the Student Free Pass program. It seems out of place right now, just considering that LTD labeled these programs just this past winter as still pilots until August. And so the last presentation on MGO didn't even have a positive the average cost per ride. And so in these uncertain times, we just assert the need for much deeper analysis in order to prove their value to our transit district. So, well, they're really nice programs, but is this, you know, asking, is this price tag cost effective to use public transportation funds right now with this already frequent bus service? Is the pilot evaluation closed? And when was that voted on? Another question that we had was the $1.7 million from the capital fund. With another $560,000 to the FTN for safety and amenity improvements. We assume that's EMX. We worry that the budget, aside from the Santa Clara station, does not reflect improvements to the urban and neighborhood routes that constitute the rest, how the rest of Eugene experiences public transit, such as route speed, stop accessibility, safety. We urge and remind you guys to robustly and effectively support the current transportation model so as to increase the appeal and usefulness for the entire community. And we're not against using resources for the existing FTN, but we just urge you to seriously consider how
effectively starving other corridors of community investment impacts their overall usefulness to the community. But lastly, we support the district in any consideration of switching away from the variable and uncertain business tax base and fare-based local revenue sources. A steady and constant basic fee per household, such as like the annual Eugene Public Library or the monthly Corvallis Transit System transit operations fee, would be much more equitable and predictable sources of for local revenue for you. And we support continuation of free fares to everyone who uses a smart pass for up to 4 rides a day for this entire fiscal year, as smart passes can collect the necessary ridership data and can also be revoked in cases of system abuse. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your public testimony today. Camille, do we have anyone else who would like to make a make testimony to us today?
I do not have anyone else indicating they would like to speak.
Great, thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing. And then just to check in with the board, are there any comments or questions? Okay, seeing none. Let's go ahead and go to the ridership and operations update with
Wait, Tom. Carl, oh, I'm yes. Sorry, I was on mute. Sorry, if we're still talking about the budget, right? I mean, this is our chance?
That's correct.
Okay, so I would like to make a comment. Can I dive in?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Sorry to be a little behind there. Just because the board received the memo from Better Eugene Springfield Transportation, but not everyone who's listening will necessarily have seen that. I believe it's going to, you know, it's being officially submitted into the record, but I think some of the points on here warrant discussion now, and I just want to give staff an opportunity to answer some of them right now. I actually would like answers to all of these, as well as to Jess Roshak's questions before we're faced with approving this budget. But I do want to at least call out a couple that are particularly big. So let me just name these quickly. A previous public communication has suggested almost the total elimination of point to point. But there's a little over $1.2 million in the budget, and so that was in the best memo. Also in the best memo is some concern about the lack of detail on some of the big capital expenditures, and although Mark Johnson in our previous meeting, or maybe, I apologize, maybe the budget committee meeting, I think was, give pretty, compelling logic about how this is a good time to continue with certain long-term capital projects, and it's totally appropriate to do so. There's just a lot of money here. The capital budget is actually going up, and things are moving around. We may need a little more a detail on that for the public. And then last, Jess called out the category planning studies is the label, but also there's nearly $500,000 for moving ahead called out in the best memo as well. And so this is a lot of money on planning. We still need to continue to do planning, but I think we need to just be clear about what those things are and maybe as a board sort of telegraph a little bit about when we expect some of these efforts to restart, since we've kind of put them on ice for the time being. So I want to put those things out there. I don't know if
Josh, AJ, what I'm thinking is, given the time, I want to be sensitive to the time and also the fact that we just got that memo. So here's what I propose, that there's a lot of stuff in that memo. And I would imagine that most, if not all, board members would like there to be some answers to some of those points and questions. So how about this? We give staff time to create responses for that, and we put that on the agenda for our future meeting.
That's good with me.
Okay. Just checking for consensus with everyone else on the board. You can use your thumbs up or just nod your head, or not hearing a dissent. That sounds like
that's
we're in
fine.
Agreement.
Thumbs
there.
Up.
Thanks, Kate. Or just saying thumbs up. That works. Okay. Well, thank you very much for bringing that up, Josh. And let's go ahead and do our ridership and operations update with Tom. Take it away, Tom.
Thanks, Carl. Here we go. So let's see, how do I do this? I want to minimize that. Okay. So here you are looking at the first chart that we've been developing over time. One of the things I'd point out, if you look back at the beginning of this span of data, so late April, can't read that, 27th, I think, we were looking at like 4,000 boardings a day, and now we're closer to 5,000. Well, and that's for MX and Core. They're very similar. Looking down here, total boardings by day, you can see we've gone from let's say that's 9,500 to about 11,000. So ridership is, as you might expect, increasing, both in response to the changes in service we've made, and then also the reopening has had an effect. In terms of portion of ridership, MX remains about 46% of total ridership during this period of time. And again, as I've said in the past, boardings after 8:30 are relatively stable, and we expect to see that continue. we've been showing you load data, and we came up with a different way of trying to visualize this. So for 40-foot buses, you're looking at, look at the size of the total bars. On May 15th, we had six overloads, but you also have the detail of seeing which routes. So there were two number 66 overloads. There were two number 24s and two 13s on that particular day. May 22nd was a high ridership day. We had overloads. We had eight overloads. Again, two of them were 67, two of them 66. We had one on the 40, a couple on the 28, and one on the number 13. So that's just a different way of visualizing the data. A little more information about, given the route and where it runs, kind of where those overloads are happening in a general sense. And I'll have something more on that. But first, let's look at the 60-foot bus loads. And again, we only have a couple of routes that run the articulated. And then, of course, this is all of the blue is MX. Similar levels of loads. And again, this is using the new standards. Again, on the 23rd, we had six overloads on the MX. And so that's what that looks like. And again, this is much lower with the higher standards that we've been using. One thing that we tried to do, and this is just kind of fresh today, so we're kind of looking at how best to do this, but this gives you a sense, and this is the data for the whole week. And so you can see here this particular orange, well, first of all, just to orient you, that's the Eugene station right there. And again, as we've said, a lot of our overloads are happening in that location. But you can see there's distributions of, and these are down in this, anything that's in this light color, you're dividing this by, this is 5 weekdays of data. So, when you're down to the one or two overloads, that means that you're experiencing overloads, two or three times a week. But in these darker colors, the orange, that's the Lindholm Center right there. Has a lot of activity, a lot of transit use, accessing, a lot of folks accessing Lindholm Center that way. And that represents probably closer to two overloads a day is what that color indicates. And the same, this is 11th and Garfield right here. That's capturing overloads in that area. And again, the rest, the light yellow tends to be two or three times a week. This little darker is going to be, you might see one, you know, one or two, well, one a day at the most in these areas. But this gives you a sense of the distribution of the overloads. And, you know, these are locations that, and the way the data is collected, some of these could be the same trips on the same day. So we're working on perfecting that, but that gives you a kind of first look at how we're able to show kind of the distribution of overloads. So we'll have, you'll see kind of, I think, improvements on this, but just wanted to show you what we're working on there. talking or speaking about ride source, we had a lot of call volume here on the sort of on the 26th. You know, this is significantly different, but a lot of these, so people can call and schedule trips way ahead of time. So this isn't for this day. This could be for, you know, the next week or so. And then with respect to ridership, you can actually see there was, you know, similar, this is Monday the 26th. So these similar levels for Monday trips, not a lot of change in this data. So just a couple things that as we've been looking around news and how we've, how different areas are reacting, what kind of interesting data there is. This is something showing the sound levels in New York City last year, and then on April 24th, it's just remarkable how different it is. And we were talking anecdotally, talking to the city, one of the city traffic engineers, and he's been looking at the data here in Eugene, and the data is about, I think he said 95% of what it is in normal times. So if you're seeing more traffic, the data backs up your visualization. And again, anecdotally, I'm working out of our bedroom now, and we're on Chambers Street, and I've just noticed the traffic coming back. So those are just some things to think about. And then to close, this is a park in Brooklyn. It's called Domino Park. We found it interesting just the way they're showing social distancing. So you can be within the circle, and there's, you know, a couple people there in that circle, and all the dog obviously can't understand what the circles are all about, but there you have it. So that's the report, and I'd answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Tom. Do we have any questions or comments? Because I've got one. Okay, I see Don. Anybody else? We'll start with Don. Go ahead, Don.
Thomas, is, you know, just part of my confusion in reading the thing is when you see the Commerce Street outbound, I just don't understand what outbound and inbound is, because that outbound from Commerce Street seems like you're going to Bonita or something. But if you're turning around and coming in, then that's inbound. Could you clarify that for me, please?
Sure. So outbound is in reference to generally outbound is in reference to the station where the trip started. So Eugene Station. So outbound is headed out, and then inbound would be heading in. On MX, the way they characterize that is that it's actually inbound from Commerce Station all the way through up the Gateway line, and then it's not inbound until it's not outbound until it's finished the complete loop. And so it's just a reference for how we operate the buses, and that's used for all. Yeah,
thank you. I was just confused about outbound from that station or inbound.
Oh, I see.
But it's the whole.
It's in the direct. It's the direction the bus is headed.
Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, next we have Josh.
Great. Thank you, Carl. Thanks, Tom. As always, this is really helpful. I guess just a really quick comment and then a very small question. I
do want to just say how incredibly transparent I think we have been with ridership data, how timely and accessible you've made the data, and how you've refined it over time, and but still had a consistency of format that has made it easy to understand. So I actually think you're doing the community a good, a great service. I think if anyone's curious about the data, simply go to any board packet, any special board meeting packet, or regular board meeting packet over the last 2 months, and you'll find almost nearly since the very beginning of this, Tom and others have been providing the data. So I really appreciate that. I think it's a huge service to the community. So we've a few enough areas where we have local data to look at. Quick question. I actually had a couple of different community members in different settings ask me what the word bid meant, as it's been used in a few places. And I know Mark and AJ occasionally use it as well. It's transit nomenclature. So if you could just say, I believe it just means like a particular set of route schedules and so on, but say what you mean, because when it says COVID bid on things, it's not clear what the label means. So
sure.
That's my only question.
Sure. I will take a shot at that, and I'm sure AJ and Mark can pick up the pieces. So a bid, we're required to do 3 bids a year in the contract. And those bids are opportunities for drivers to basically rebid the work. Again, that happens 3 times a year, and that's done in a fashion where everybody, it's by seniority, and so highest seniority gets the first pick of work, and it's basically required to do that 3 times. Now, we've done, we may do more than 3 this year just because of the circumstance. As you know, we've made modifications to the service. We actually made a couple of modifications to the service from call it pre-pandemic times to the bid that we did in April. And then we're planning another one in June to add Sunday service. So, but we use the bid to kind of distribute the work in an efficient way.
And I can add a few things to that. So there's a few things that go on during, at bid times. One is it's a time to change routes and schedules. And the second usefulness is that it's a time where operators can change their work time of day or whatever, days off, if they want to. And as Tom said, it's on seniority basis. We're required to do at least 3 a year, and but we can do more. So,
great. And I'll go ahead and ask the last question, I think, Tom. I was wondering, I think based on your chart of overloads, we seem to have quite a few on the last Friday. Is it trending? If it does trend up, do we have any contingency plans on how to mitigate that?
Well, I can speak to, some of the solutions there, if they're pervasive, would be to actually look at how many buses were operating on the route. But, I mean, there's other things that we have in place to try and manage the loads related to, at a point, and I haven't been reporting this, but we could start looking at this. At some point, a driver has the option when he or she thinks the bus is at the limit, can go to what's called drop-off only. So not picking up new passengers until they drop below. So those are some of the things that we can do to manage these. And Mark, you might have some other descriptions of what we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's I mean, what you're explained is kind of the bottom line. If it gets too full, we just quit picking people up. You know, not what we really want to do. But, you know, again, it happens pretty infrequently, just looking at, and we also, because we're using face coverings now, and we've gone from 15, or we've gone up to 20 on 40 footers and 30 people on 60 footers. And that's helped, and is still maintain some level of social distancing, but the masks are helpful. So, you know, you can have a little more tolerance as long as everyone's wearing masks.
Great, thank you very much. I just wanted to keep that in mind, as even though it looks like we're pretty level right now, I anticipate there could be the possibility we start getting more volume in ridership.
Carl, oh, sorry, Mark, go ahead.
Yeah, just and I mean, and that's why we're collecting the data every day. You know, I mean, if we need to put another bus out to cover the, you know, overloads, then, you know, that's what we have to do. And that's why we're really trying to get the data to say, okay, where is this happening? You know, I mean, and how is it happening? And, you know, is it just happening for two blocks or is it happening, you know, for an extended period of time where, you know, it makes sense to get another bus out there. So, you know, it's a lot of data that we're really going through and trying to understand what's really happening and how we should, you know, what the appropriate response is.
Great. Thank you very much, Mark. Go ahead, Josh.
Actually, Mark just answered it. Thank you.
Okay, great. For some of the other people who haven't had a chance to talk. Oh, Don, go ahead.
Well, just a question about the overloads. Does you get the data as it's accumulated coming and going, but does the driver have an opportunity to really count who's on? I mean, if you've got 28 people on a 60-foot bus, can they really determine whether it's time now not to pick somebody up, or is that just a judgment call from their experience?
Yeah, I mean, it's a judgment call to a certain degree, but, you know, they can count pretty easily and you know, I mean, they can count to 30 pretty easily. And so, you know, that really hasn't been a big problem.
Great. Just want to check in. Caitlin, Emily, Stephen, anything you'd like to add for the good of the order?
Nope. Since we've been over this, I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly again. Thank you for asking.
No problem. Okay. Oh, go ahead, Emily.
Emily, the only thing that I've mentioned is that, you know, we have to have a budget, and we have to have a budget that seems like something like a way that is capability of our deadline. So I think we've really gone over this information pretty extensively at this point, as the administrator. One thing I would say,
hey, Emily, it's really hard to hear you. Can you see if you can speak up or?
Sorry, is that any better?
Much better.
Yeah.
Much better.
Thank you.
I hope I didn't yell in your ear. Basically, I just wanted to say that we know that we have to make a budget, and typically, once we make a budget, we're pretty stuck on that information. So I just want to ask the board to keep in mind that if the budget's not perfect right now, which of course is always the goal, we can always go back and make modifications. So I just want to make sure we're keeping an open mind, not just as we're getting through this process, but even beyond it. So that's all I would like to add.
Great. Thanks, Emily. Just checking in with you, Stephen. Anything you'd like to add?
I would like to second what Emily just said. This is a fluid situation, and as things hit us, we need to be able to adapt, and nothing is set in stone.
Great. Thank you very much. Well, everyone, thank you very much for having this meeting. Thank you to LTD staff and, of course, all of the LTD employees who are out there every day serving the public. And thank you for the public for being here and providing testimony to us today. So I hope everyone has a great evening and stays healthy and safe. So meeting adjourned. Have a good night.
Thank you.